Hello, I'm Matt Baume, and welcome to The Sewers of Paris. We're on a podcast search for the entertainment that's changed the lives of queer people. On tonight's episode, Into the Woods, Dionne Warwick, and Drag Race. My guest this week spent 8 years auditioning for Drag Race before he was accepted and his life completely changed. Alexis Michelle, aka Alex Michaels, was a theater performer when he discovered a love of drag and eventually figured out how to turn his hobby into his career. Now, Alexis is known for two much-talked-about appearances on Drag Race, for appearing on the show Dragnificent, for multiple off-Broadway roles, an album, and an upcoming live tour. But Alex and Alexis are only just getting started. Ever since seeing his first Sondheim show at the age of 5, he's never stopped dreaming of Broadway, and he's never been closer to making that dream a reality. We'll have that conversation in a minute, but first, a quick reminder that I have a new book out. It's about the behind-the-scenes history of queer characters on sitcoms and the role that comedy played in queer liberation. It's called Hi Honey, I'm Homo, and it's available now wherever books are sold. I can even sign and personalize your copy before shipping it to you. Just go to gaysitcoms.com and look for the instructions for ordering a signed copy. Also, don't forget to swing by my YouTube channel for videos about film and TV history. That's at youtube.com/mattbaum. I've got a video coming this Sunday, August 6th, about the behind-the-scenes making of All in the Family. Also, join me every Sunday for live streams over on Twitch at twitch.tv/mattbaum, where I share the amazing bits of film and TV history that I come across in my research. Big thanks to everyone who makes all my work possible on Patreon. Visit patreon.com/mattbaum to support Sewers of Paris and get patron-exclusive benefits. Now, here's my conversation with Alex. Well, this week I'm speaking with Alex Michaels, a.k.a. Alexis Michelle, from Season 9 and All-Stars 8 of RuPaul's Drag Race. Thanks so much for joining me.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
So what is the entertainment that changed your life?
The most pivotal piece of art that I think started this train running was seeing the original production of Into the Woods when I was 5 years old on Broadway.
Oh, holy Toledo. Goodness gracious. That, like, the Bernadette Peters, like that
the one.
Wow.
The definitive, the original cast.
Good gravy. Tell me all about that. What was that like?
So it was something that my dad took me to see. And I imagine, you know, at a young age, they thought, oh, this will work. It's about fairy tales. And of course, it's got plenty of adult themes and is full of life lessons that have only grown with me as I've grown and gone through life and experienced life. But right off the bat, I fell in love with stagecraft. Mm-hmm. Because when you look back at the magical stagecraft in that production, it's quite tame compared to what is doable now these days, but it was absolutely magical. Mm. And just lit my soul up. And even at that young age, I responded to and clicked in and became obsessed with Sondheim's work. Sondheim's music and lyrics absolutely spoke to me at that young age. And I think the meaning of some of the lyrics are part of what I mean when I say I grew with it. Little by little, as I matured, I started to understand more of it and understand it on a deeper, more lived-in level. Mm. But I fell in love with theater, with stagecraft, with Sondheim, and yet again, just more of these powerhouse female performances. Obviously, Bernadette Peters as the witch was transformative for me, and I had already known Bernadette Peters from the movie musical version of Annie, and so seeing one of my on-screen ladies in person was mind-blowing in its own way, but learning about who Joanna Gleason was and her dynamic talents, it was just an incredible, incredible foundational introduction to the theater.
Do you remember, and I know this was quite a long time ago, but do you remember, like, coming out of the theater and how it felt? And, like, did you feel like a different kid from when you went in?
Definitely. And I remember going home and relaying the details of it to my mom, because at this point my mom and dad were already divorced. So what I remember relaying to my mother was I told her how they wove these fairy tales together. That was really mind-blowing to a little kid. It was like, well, there was this story, but it was these other stories that I knew already and how they tied together. And that was really magical to me, the way they brought these different fairy tales together.
Yeah. Well, and what's so remarkable about that is, you know, I think for a small child, sure, the fairy tale stuff is recognizable, but it sounds like it really spoke to you on a level that I think a lot of kids might either be bored by or just might not even notice.
Yeah, for sure. It probably wouldn't have held every child's attention, but it certainly held my attention on an emotional level. While I think I grew with the lyrics, what got me right away was the feeling of the music. That spoke to me even at that young age.
Were you a theatrical kid at that point?
Yeah, absolutely. I'd been growing up watching. There were a handful of movies that I watched over and over again on VHS that I think were the even earlier seeds of theatricality for me. It was My Fair Lady, Sound of Music, Annie, Grease, The Wizard of Oz. These were so foundational in who I am as an actor, as a drag artist, and I always, just as I've always gravitated to women in life, I gravitated to women in the arts. Powerhouse, strong, dynamic women, performers. These people really spoke to me and made me want to literally step into their shoes.
I think with all of the shows that you just listed, I think absolutely every single one of those involves a makeover. At some point, like the heroine gets like a new look at some point in the show.
That's a good point. And I don't know if that's one that I understood, but now that I'm thinking of it, I see exactly how that lines up. And maybe that is part of the appeal for me. That transformation is so, so interesting to me and alluring. Mm-hmm. And because I know the power of drag is that you can put on this costume or this armor. And it might, even though I say costume, it might be a costume that affirms how you feel on the inside and strengthens how you feel on the inside. But the power of drag is even when you take that armor off, you can retain the power that you found in it.
When did you start performing for an audience?
I was performing from a very young age. I would come home. Oh, and I think I forgot to mention Mary Poppins. That was on the list too. And I remember moving about the whole household with my umbrella, trying to fly off of surfaces, jumping off of surfaces with umbrellas. So, my performative life started young, playing dress up, playing within the world of imagination, started at a really, really young age. But my interest in telling stories and performing in theater started to grow really from those early years. And within a couple years after seeing that performance, I was in my first acting class. And yeah, so my performative life started young. I knew at a very young age this is what I wanted to do.
How did the adults in your life respond to, I can only imagine how enthusiastically you were a musical child.
I am so lucky. At no point. Now, yes, there was a bit of a learning curve when it came time to come out with my sexuality. And there was a kind of second coming out when I said, oh, remember that dress up thing? That's not going away. So there's definitely been a learning curve and it's been a journey for everybody. But I am super lucky that from the beginning, I was never questioned or encouraged to do something else. I was supported in my love and pursuit of the performing arts. I have parents, all four of my parents have always been my biggest cheerleaders of my performing and artistic life.
Tell me about some of the early roles that you enjoyed, you know, either as a, I don't know, singer, dancer, like what kind of drama did you do?
Well, even before seeing Into the Woods, my first performance came in nursery school playing Ferdinand the Bull. And if you're familiar with the children's storybook, Ferdinand was a bull who did not want to be a part of the bullfight. He wanted to sit and smell the flowers.
Mm-hmm.
And I connect to that on many levels, being someone who is anti-violence, has never understood violence as the way. That speaks to me. I also have a genuine love of flowers. So there was something very on brand about that being my first role I ever played. And in the years to come, I've been so lucky, a lot of incredible opportunities. Another one that really hit on that kind of soul level was when I was in college in Ann Arbor studying musical theater at University of Michigan. I had the opportunity to do a youth production of Seussical. So I was college aged, and my friends from the musical theater department were directing this production, and they asked me to play Horton the Elephant. And again, it's sort of the story of a gentle giant. And I really connected on a soul level with Horton the Elephant. And interestingly, one of my co-stars in that production, who played Maisie the Bird, was Ashley Park, who has seen incredible success on Broadway and on our screens now, and is just one of our great rising stars.
At what point did drag start to creep into what you were doing?
Well, as I said, that interest in dressing up and telling stories was there as long as I can remember. And I had been pursuing theater from such a young age, and it became my focus in education, and then it became my focus in my professional career. But probably in high school and in college, I just realized that this drag expression was not something that I could just tuck away forever, that it was something that was going to be a part of my life. And it was in the late years of high school and the early years of college that I started doing it professionally. I had my first paid gigs at the legendary Stonewall Inn, and little by little, I kept dabbling in drag for about a decade.
Mm-hmm.
And then in 2014, it became more of a full-time pursuit while I was juggling several other jobs to bring income in as well.
What do you remember about that first performance at the Stonewall?
I didn't know how you made the rounds. I didn't know how you got into nightlife. I've learned now that really the way in is getting up in your aesthetic, getting up in your look, going out, meeting people, creating, building, meeting your community. And I just didn't know the way, and I didn't have any mentors telling me this is how you do it. And so I had made the rounds to these gay bars in the West Village with a list of songs that I knew I could perform, and a couple photocopied, printed photos of myself wearing makeup and wigs.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how I got these first couple gigs. And so I remember not having much context of community, and I had a few friends that I was able to get in, and I performed downstairs at the Stonewall on this tiny little platform in the middle of the room, and it was thrilling. And I started to understand and comprehend the power of drag and how it speaks to people.
Do you remember the songs that you did?
I don't remember what I performed at the Stonewall that night. Well, I remember this for sure in a drag bar in Detroit called Gigi's. So this was already when I was in school at Michigan. I performed at Gigi's, and I remember performing to Cher's Strong Enough.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a camouflage tank top and tiny little camouflage booty shorts. And I had this old pair of camouflage cargo pants that I tore apart and created a kind of over wrap skirt out of. And I remember taking scraps of fabric and attaching them to this overskirt. And that was the first time I explored a reveal in drag.
Mm-hmm. What made you make the switch from, it sounds like at first drag was something for fun, or it was just a part of what you were doing? When did it become more serious for you?
I don't think I understood how serious it was to my identity and my self-expression in those early days. I saw it as a joyful, fun performance. It was definitely performative. And I really, thanks to Drag Race, understood that it could be a career. And that it could be a serious career. And when I was started pursuing it full time, as I said, in 2014, it wasn't enough yet for me to make a living doing solely, but it did start to bring some supplemental income. And it was certainly very expressive. And then as it became my full-time career, I've come to learn over the past several years that it's more than performative. It's accessing and expressing and bringing to the physical life, to the surface, a part of who I am. It's expressing my fluidity and frankly, my female side.
Do you find yourself drawing inspiration from other performers? Like you mentioned that the Drag Race was something that helped you zero in on it being an occupation, a career. Were there people who helped kind of guide your look and your aesthetic?
Not really, not in the beginning. I didn't have a drag mom or drag sisters. So much of my early foundations were really just taking inspiration from life and art. A few years later, I met who I would call my first drag sister, and that was Coco Aviance from the legendary House of Aviance. Coco and I became friends through a connection in the theater, also someone who has the theater running through their veins. And we would go out and get dolled up. And that was the first time I understood what it meant to have drag family, to have people that got you, that you got, that could inspire you, that could push you to take it further. So in the beginning, it was really a kind of independent process. And as it's blossomed and developed, of course, I have friends, I have sisters, I have community that I will often run stuff by. But the truth is still, it often stems from some internal inspiration, whether it's being inspired by something I'm seeing. But generally, when I get an idea of something I want to do or put together, I usually have a rather specific idea of what that's going to look like in my mind.
Can you give me some examples of your favorite looks? Like you mentioned, you draw inspiration, but you have a look in your mind. Like what have some of your favorite acts or outfits been?
Well, I'm going to recall actually a moment from season 9 of Drag Race. We had Night of 1,000 Madonnas, and it was a runway theme that had been done the year before, and it became a rather controversial one because several people brought Madonna's kimono looks. And so there was a joke about kimono, she better don't, because there were a lot of Madonna in kimonos. And instantly I knew which Madonna look I wanted to create, because a really, really pivotal moment in arts and culture again was seeing the 90s Dick Tracy film. Actually, I say 90s, it might have been late 80s, I don't remember. But around that time, late 80s, early 90s,
yeah,
that's when Dick Tracy came out. And Madonna, the design of that whole movie and the cinematography were really impactful, but the kind of understated, shimmering black 1930s glamour that Madonna served as Breathless Mahoney in that film were really pivotal to me. Neutral colors, she was either always in black or in white slash crystal or silver. And those looks were really impactful. And so getting to pay homage to that on the runway of season 9 was a big deal. And when we approached that, you know, coming up with that look, I worked with my friend Bobby, who has a huge wig business. Many people know Bobby as Bobby Pins on Instagram. And it was about finding the right wig and the right color and setting it just right and making sure that the curl pattern really matched Madonna's, which was, of course, based in the 1930s, but had a little bit of a modern flair. And when it came to creating the silhouette for that gown, I am much curvier then and now than Madonna in that film. And so I try not to apply a stencil or a template to my looks. I try to approach each one with fresh eyes and really honor the look. So when we were creating the silhouette for that gown, my friend DW, who made that dress, we intentionally did not pad me with the usual padding that I wore, because it would have created a much curvier silhouette, and we wanted to create something that had curves because Madonna had beautiful curves in that movie, but compared to my typical silhouette was much straighter up and down, particularly through the hips. So that was about changing the proportion to better suit the overall look, the overall aesthetic.
How important was Drag Race to you, like to get on that first time for season 9?
Oh, it was incredibly important to me. I auditioned for the show 8 years before season 9 came through.
Mm-hmm.
And with each year, I only wanted it more, and it meant more to me. And being a part of RuPaul's legacy, being a part of the sisterhood of Drag Race meant so much to me. So it was extremely validating and affirming when it finally happened. And it's been a wild ride, a wild journey since. And it's been full of moments of triumph and struggle and affirmation. And it's been a really multifaceted, big chapter of my life.
What kind of work were you doing prior to that season, prior to getting on, when you're, you know, auditioning and sending the tape every year? What was your work like in terms of drag and whatever else you were doing, you know, as a performer?
Well, I'd been doing drag a few years when I auditioned the first time, but I certainly wasn't doing it full time. I was really just dabbling. It was truly a hobby at that point.
Mm.
And what changed things was in 2014, I started doing drag full time along with other work. I was working as a hair and makeup artist on photo shoots. I was working in event design. I was working in catering. I was working bartending, food service, a lot of different things. And in 2016, that's when the call finally came and I went and I filmed Drag Race. And since then, since 2016, I've been able to make my living doing drag, which is a real gift. I'm a performing artist who makes my livelihood in the career I've chosen. So that's a tremendous gift.
How much has that, you know, early inspiration from Broadway and musical theater, how much does that inform the drag that you were doing then and now?
It's always been there. Whether I'm performing pop music or theatrical music, that theatrical sensibility is always there. For example, I've never liked it when somebody introduces you and they tell the audience what you're going to do. Mm-hmm. I like the element of surprise, and that's something that's born out of my love of the theater. So if I am about to enter and I'm being introed, I don't want anything revealed. If I'm about to walk on stage, it's important to be hidden, that I'm not seen, so that I can make an entrance. And that's all mentality and values that come from the theater.
Mm-hmm. Do you ever perform out of drag, or is it all drag all the time?
Oh, no. I mean, my young performance life, when I started acting, obviously, I wasn't dressing up in a femme-presenting way in the beginning or all the time, for sure. And my education was pursuing theater out of drag. And that was my career's goal for a long time. And it wasn't until seeing Drag Race that I thought, oh, maybe this can be the focus. Maybe this can be a central part of my career. And it certainly became that, and certainly has been, and I'm sure will be in some ways, but it's certainly not the only way that I am interested in performing and telling stories. I just like looking at life through this lens of performance. And to me, there's all sorts of walks of life that I want to represent, that I want to interpret. And there's multifacets of my life that I want to represent. So it definitely extends beyond just the art form of drag.
What sort of aspects of your life have you been able to incorporate into your act?
I think really one of the most special moments for me, there were two moments on this recent season of All Stars that I was able to do that. First, on the Miss Fill in the Blank runway, where I was the pageant winner of a title of my choosing, and I was Miss Manpig. And it was the first time. I've always been a kind of body presence in drag. I am a sexual being, and I incorporate that into my banter. But this was the first time that I took something that's so central to my identity, my sexuality, and really visually connected it with my drag. Hmm. That's not something I've really had done before that in such a strong way, and getting to create this look that was so conceptual and so sex forward and sex positive was really affirming. And of anything I've ever done, I think what I got to do in the talent show performing If You Want My Apples, written by my friend Brandon James Gwynn, that was a really full circle moment of bringing every bit of theatricality that I've been brought up with and enriched by, and being able to incorporate that not only into what I do in drag, because really I've always been very theatrical in drag, but being able to incorporate in that way on this worldwide platform and stage was a really incredible moment.
What kind of opportunities have you had since appearing on season 9? Where have you been able to travel, and what kind of venues have you been able to perform with, or people that you've performed with?
It's been an incredible journey. And since season 9, I certainly made the rounds performing in a lot of nightclubs and at pride festivals and meeting so many incredible people on my travels, all over the world and this country. That's a real gift. But I think what's been special is in the years following that sort of surge of nonstop travel, is I've been able to focus in on the kind of projects and performances that are more aligned with who I really am as a performer. So creating my debut album, Love Fool, and having it released by Broadway Records was really, really a dream come true. And getting to be a guest ringmaster with the Big Apple Circus, that's a dream I never even thought to dream. I used to go to the Big Apple Circus when I was a kid, and maybe I thought about being in the circus, but certainly never dressed up and expressing myself so authentically. There have been so many incredible moments getting to perform my cabaret shows in New York City and all over the world, particularly and most recently at Joe's Pub. I had 2 sold out nights with my music director and collaborator, Brandon James Gwynn, along with an incredible band. That's been the kind of stuff that's been really amazing. And the way that the exposure that I found in drag has brought me back around to my first love of acting. I got to make my network TV debut on Blue Bloods in a guest star, and that was out of drag. So again, just playing with all of the facets and all of the crayons in my box has been a real gift provided to me by the experience, or not provided, but just the doors that it's opened.
Are there opportunities that you'd like to have? Like, what would be your dream show, or, you know, like if you're looking into the future, like the thing that you feel like you are working towards?
Yeah, the dream of being on Broadway has never died and stays ever present and still something I'm pursuing, and happy to say that that it is something I'm able to pursue, that people are looking at me seriously for those kind of opportunities. And I look forward to when that dream happens, perhaps several times over. And yeah, there are shows running now I could see myself in. I also know that there are shows that haven't premiered yet or that haven't even been written yet that might be just the ticket for me. And not just on stage. I really appreciate and love the medium of television and film. I think the intimacy that you're able to achieve on camera is very special, because while I live under the spotlight on the stage, while that lights up my soul, and while I can certainly amplify my voice and my presence and my movement for the stage, in a more organic way, I'm actually kind of a quiet person, especially when I'm not in performance mode. So an acting medium that speaks to me is on camera work, because it tends to be a bit more from the inside out, a bit more internal, and the choices are much smaller. The quiver of a lip, the raise of a brow, these small impressions speak volumes on camera in a way that they don't always read on the stage. So it's 2 different mediums, but both of them really speak to me a lot. So I definitely want to keep telling stories on camera and on stage in front of a live audience.
What are your favorite musicals? Like, if you could be in any Broadway show, which one would you want to be in?
Well, if we're talking about things that are running, I could totally see myself playing Madame Morrible in Wicked. There are several tracks in Chicago that I've always wanted to play, and I hope and feel in my bones that I'll get to someday. There's a production running now, which, of course, you know, my stepping into it might not make sense based on the direction of this current production, but I've always thought playing Mrs. Lovett in Sweeney Todd could be really interesting. I think as a character, she's an independent, strong business owner. She does not have a partner. She's childless. And these are things that she wants. And I think dramaturgically speaking, Mrs. Lovett could actually be someone who is not assigned female at birth. I think there are reasons sometimes that people end up in the position they're in. And so I think it's an interesting angle to take, that what might keep someone from having a partner? What might keep someone from having a child? And so I think Mrs. Lovett being non-binary or fluid in some way, or presenting in a femme way, even if not assigned female at birth, is something that could be very interesting. And there are as I said, other things that I know haven't made it to the Broadway stage yet. I got to see a student workshop production. It was a full production, but it was still put on by students and by the great writer Douglas Carter Bean of his beloved screenplay, Tu Wong Fu, Thanks for Everything, Julie Newmar. And that movie spoke to me in a huge way as a young person when I saw it. And it's only continued to speak to me more. And I feel a very kind of soul connection with Vita Boheme. And so that show is having its next stage of development in the UK this year. And I look forward to getting into the room for my shot at it when it has its next incarnation here in the States.
That's really exciting, because I think that's a show that's meant a lot to a lot of folks, for, you know, queer people who were coming up in the 90s. It was that and Priscilla, the two Road Trip movies, were so important.
And I know that a lot of people don't necessarily know the connection there. But of course, Priscilla came first and was a beautiful, incredible Australian made film. And I think in many ways, Tu Wong Fu is the American version or spin-off of that story. And they are wonderful counterpoints, but they're also apples and oranges. They are very much their own, and should be enjoyed for all that they have to offer. Respect.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Two really different shows that are, you know, they're not trying to be each other.
Yes.
Do you find yourself ever going back to Into the Woods and thinking about either being in that or just appreciating it again?
Oh, I mean, that's certainly on the list. Pretty much all of Sondheim's work are shows that I would love to be able to interpret. And I had a funny sort of brush with fate with Into the Woods already as far as performing in it. I was in my sophomore year at LaGuardia High School, aka the Fame High School. And at LaGuardia, you audition for the big school musical the year before. So we were auditioning for Into the Woods for my junior year. And the same day that the cast list went up was the same day I had to decide if I was going to stay at LaGuardia or make a big change and head to Interlochen in Northern Michigan, where I'd been for summer camp already for three summers. And was about to go spend another summer at. And I had applied to the academy and had to decide, was I going to stay at LaGuardia or was I going to go to Interlochen? And it was really painful because Into the Woods was this show that felt part of my destiny. And I was cast as Cinderella's prince. And the same day decided that I was going to go to Interlochen instead. So I never got to do Into the Woods at LaGuardia. And well, when the first revival of Into the Woods happened on Broadway, I was in college. It was probably my freshman year of college. So I did not audition for that. And then I was out of college when the next sort of major production of it was put on, which was by the Public Theater for Shakespeare in the Park. And I would have very much liked to audition for that, but I was really at a, you know, early stage in my career and couldn't even get an appointment for it. So I feel like I've been cheated by fate a few times by being in Into the Woods, but that's definitely on the list of dream shows. And again, in pretty much any role.
When you look at the show now, are there characters you identify with or messages you take away from it that are, I imagine, very different from when you were a small child?
I don't think right away, at that early age that I saw it, I don't think right away I was envisioning, oh, where's my place in this? It was more just being enchanted by the whole thing and wanting to do that as in the theater rather than, oh, I want to play this part. I think my attraction to certain roles in the show came with life and living and experience. And there are parts of The Witch I identify with. I identify with that feeling of solitude, otherness, loneliness, a desire for family, a desire to protect the family that I do have. There's definitely a strong parental instinct within me, and that's something that the witch possesses, even if it's to a fault in her case, and even if in trying to shelter and protect, she ends up smothering and pushing her child away. I do relate in some ways to the witch, and also being occasionally misunderstood is a way that I relate to the witch. I also relate similarly to the baker and the baker's wife, because they appreciate and live a simple life, living in the woods in a cottage, baking bread for people, and those are things I love. I love to cook. I love to entertain around the dinner table as well as on stage. But they're also people longing for something, longing for that family that they don't have yet. And of course, I've been blessed with the family I was born into, and I've been really blessed with the chosen family I've found in my queer community and in my drag community. But the part of family that I'm still longing for is my someone and someone to walk through this life with. There was a song that I sang in my cabaret at Joe's Pub in June, made to me most popular by Dionne Warwick, "A House Is Not a Home." And the kind of climactic lyric and musical rise of that song is, I'm not meant to be alone. And that's something that resonates with me. I know there are many people who love and appreciate and protect their alone time, their solitude. And I know the value of it, and I know when it's important, but maybe it's my Libra-ness, but I don't think I'm meant to be alone forever. I think companionship is something that's foundationally important to me.
So you've just finished up All Stars, and what are you heading out into next, and where can people follow you?
Well, you can find me on Instagram and TikTok at Alexis Michelle Official and other social platforms. But I'm really excited about all the music I have out right now. There's two theatrical originals by Brandon James Gwynn, If You Want My Apples, and Lulu's Shoes, as well as four really fun and dynamic pop offerings that I created with 808 Annie and Mason Rose. And I'm super excited, in addition to creating a tour of my Joe's Pub show and more dates at Joe's Pub to be announced soon, I'm also hitting the road again this fall with Witch Perfect, with Tina Burner and Scarlett Envy and Blake Allen, our wonderful co-creator and music director. And the show that Blake and Tina wrote together is brilliant. It's funny. It's referential. It's new. It's topical. And it's fantastic entertainment. And it's all live sung. And the variety of musical material is wide, and it's got something for everybody. And I told Tina last year, because we toured with it last season as well, I said, Tina, this is amazing. I will do this. every year for the rest of my career. It's that much fun. So I cannot wait to be on another worldwide tour with Tina and Scarlett and Blake. And we're just going to have the best time. So get your tickets to Witch Perfect. If we're coming to a town anywhere near you, get them.
Fantastic. That sounds great. Cannot wait for that. Alex/Alexis, thanks so much for joining me.
Thank you so much. This is a real treat.
Thanks to Alex for joining me. Thanks to you for listening. And thanks to everybody who makes the Sewers of Paris possible on Patreon. Head over to patreon.com/MattBaume to support the podcast and get back rewards like weekly bonus videos and a care pack in the mail. Check out my new book, Hi Honey, I'm Homo, for a history of queer characters on American sitcoms. Visit my YouTube channel for stories from behind the scenes of iconic pop culture. And keep up with even more of my work through my weekly newsletter. You can find all that and more at mattbaume.com. The theme song for The Sewers of Paris is Parisian from filmmusic.io by Kevin MacLeod of Comptech.com, licensed under Creative Commons by Attribution 4.0. And until next time, croissant.